Welcome back to American FC. I'm your host, Matthew Hayes. And I know it's been about almost 2 months since we posted our last podcast. We've had a lot going on. I've been very busy with work, holidays, so I hope everybody's had a great holiday. But it's New Year. We're going to get started off correctly this year. We're going to go forth every week. We're going to try to post at least one or two podcasts every week so we can continue to talk about the Prem. So let's just go a little bit of a rundown of where we stand and what's to look forward to. So as of right now, we have games that have been played over this weekend, and we're kind of in our like festivity phase of the year, so we're playing a lot of games back-to-back-to-back. So we got Man City is on 21 games played. We got Chelsea on 21 games played. Liverpool is in third place with 20 games played with a game in hand. Arsenal in fourth with a game in hand. West Ham in fifth with a game in hand. Tottenham's rocking out in sixth place. They got 3 games in hand. Followed up in seventh is Man United. They got 2 games in hand. Wolves finish out in eighth with 2 games in hand. Brighton are in ninth with 2 games in hand. And Leicester have dropped surprisingly down to 10th place, but yet they still got 3 games in hand as well. We got Crystal Palace in 11th with 1 game in hand. Brentford's in 12th. They got 2 games in hand. And 13th, we got Aston Villa with 2 games in hand. Southampton in 14th with 2 games in hand. Everton has been dropped down to 15th with 3 games in hand. Leeds are in 16th place with 19 games with 2 games in hand. Watford are in 17th place with 3 games in hand. Burnley is in 18th place with 4 games in hand. Newcastle's in 19th with 2 games in hand, and Norwich is in 20th place with 2 games in hand. Now, a lot of these games in hand are coming due to COVID outbreak. The COVID outbreak has really hit the UK pretty hard in the last couple weeks, so a lot of teams are playing with very limited squads. A lot of games are being postponed due to that, so it is kind of a struggle to get through these games. A lot of teams are sitting in positions we really wouldn't expect them to be sitting in due to COVID because they do have these games in hand. So as the season progresses, obviously, I don't expect to see Wolves in 8. I don't expect to see Tottenham in 6. You know, United might not be in 7th at that time once they play their games in hand. Leicester being in 10th place with their 3 games in hand. I mean, a lot can change. So let's get into the first weekend fixtures of this past weekend. Like I said, I'm going to kind of go over just from January 1st. Going through now to the new year. So January 1st, on opening day of the new year, City visited Arsenal. Now, as you all know, I'm a huge Man City fan. I followed City for many years. But I was kind of skeptical and kind of worried going into this game due to the fact that Arsenal's been in, like, fantastic form. I think that Arteta's really changed the whole mindset of Arsenal, the dynamic at Arsenal. I feel like the young players he's brought in have just really took Arsenal to the next level. So City have gone to this game on a 9-game win streak. Arsenal coming to this game on 8 wins without or 8 games without a loss. So it was going to be a very hard game for City to go to. Also, with City playing during midweek and Arsenal not having that midweek game, you know, Arsenal had more preparation for this game. So this game started out pretty strong in Arsenal's favor. I mean, it was a non-stop Arsenal push. They were very compacted, very tight at the back, very tight in midfield. I mean, City was having a very hard time to kind of break down Arsenal during this game. And, you know, as I continued to watch, you know, I felt like, okay, you know, Arsenal's probably going to get this win. You know, I felt like City just weren't at their normal selves. Now, Arsenal did have a penalty call early in the game, and you know, it wasn't reviewed by the ref going to the VAR screen, but the VAR did look at it and, you know, deemed it not to be a penalty, which I felt was a little harsh because any other day I feel like they probably would have gotten this penalty, but I feel like playing against City, they probably kind of got the benefit of the doubt and did not get the penalty they deserved. So VAR rules it off is not a big deal. It is whatever. But they did end up going 1-0 up on City and through Saka. And once again, it just goes to show that Saka for Arsenal is just an astonishing player. I mean, this kid, you know, had a rough Euros, you know, missed a penalty at Euros, which cost England, you know, to win the Euro championship, and Italy ended up winning it through on penalties. But what he's been able to overcome this year, I mean, he's been one of Arsenal's standout players other than Smith Rowe this year. So Saka gets the goal to go 1-0 up. And Arsenal continued to just dominate City in midfield, dominate them at the back. I mean, they really were giving City a hard run for their money. At halftime, game was at 1-0 Arsenal. I really felt like City might get a goal, and if it did, it was going to come, it was going to have to come from something, just either a penalty to us or something that's going to have to happen to where they just finally got through Arsenal's defense line. So, first half ended, second half kicked off. Once again, Arsenal came out with the same kind of game plan. And I felt like, okay, you know, maybe not. City might not get this draw or might not get a win in this situation. But they did dig in deep. They got a City did end up getting the penalty. Now, the penalty on Bernardo Silva that was given away, I feel like probably wasn't a penalty, but the sheer fact that Xhaka grabbed onto Bernardo Silva's shirt, referee was sent over to look at the VAR screen, it did allow the penalty to be given, which in Arsenal's defense is very harsh, but you know, you can't grab a player's shirt in the box, and when they go down, I mean, they're going to sell that. And I think Bernardo Silva sold it, and I think that the referee bought into it. I think VAR bought into it, but it is what it is. I mean, it ended up being a penalty. Now, Mahrez took up the penalty, scored it. You know, no big deal. I figured he would. But let's talk about Gabriel. So Gabriel for Arsenal, before the ball went into the back of the net, before the penalty was took, this man walked in the penalty spot and scuffed the pitch, which is illegal, and he got booked for it. Now, I understand the frustration giving up penalty. I understand you trying to, like, put the opposition off. I understand that you're doing whatever you can so they don't score. But doing that was illegal, and it ended up costing him later because within the next 2 or 3 minutes, Arsenal went down to 10 men because of it. So, not only did he scuff the penalty box and get a yellow card, after they scored the penalty, Arsenal kicked back off, and Arsenal pretty much went full force all-out attack at Edison in the net. And Laporte for City came up big with the header to try to get away to get the ball over Edison. Edison came out of his net. Ball went over Edison, and then it was goal line clearance off our line from Ake. Now, full credit to Ake, because I've had speculations about this kid since, like, he signed for City. I felt like we overpaid for him. But, you know, credit to him. He really showed his true colors in a City shirt over the weekend. I mean, the dude had a great game, probably one of the best games I've ever seen him play at City. So, when his goal line clearance happened, Martinelli for Arsenal, wide open net. I was like, oh, here we go, 2-0, 2-1 to City. Ended up not being. I mean, Martinelli missed a wide open net, which blew my mind. But, you know, things like that happen. So, after that happened, Edison kicked the ball downfield. And as he was going downfield, you know, Jesus picked up the ball. And when he picked up the ball, I was like, okay, here we go. We're on a counterattack. Let's get it going. Well, what ended up happening is Gabriel, who was on a yellow card to begin with because of the scuffing of the penalty box, decided that, you know, I'm going to tackle Gabriel Jesus. And doing that, what ended up happening was it led to a red card. Now, if this red card would not have happened, I think that Arsenal probably would have went on to win this game. But because that red card was happened and they went down to 10 men, it allowed Arsenal to now become more vulnerable to City. But all credit to Arsenal. The whole time they were down 10 men, they constantly still dominated City. They still dominated midfield. They dominated the back. I mean, City still struggled to play against a 10-man Arsenal team, which just goes to show the power that Arteta's done at City, or that Arteta's done at Arsenal. So the work he's done there is phenomenal. And City ended up getting a very late goal through Rodri on like the 93rd minute of the game. And I feel like the goal went in and it was probably due to the fact that Arsenal pretty much had played their hearts out and they were just tired and it just happened. So because that went in, City ended up winning the game 2-1. But I think Arsenal needs to take this and Arsenal fans need to take this as it's a win in their book, because to go against a team who's in the lead right now in the top of the table and is doing what they're doing, like they've done the last couple seasons, being a high contender, and Arsenal struggling at the beginning of the season. For them now, they show what it is to win games. They can show what it is to play against the big boys and keep it tight, keep it defensive minded, do what they need to do. And I think they just got the bad end of the stick in the sense of I don't think the referee made calls in their direction all that way. I think they just kind of got, at the end of the day, it came down to, you know, 50-50, and they end up getting the bad call in the end of it. So, Arsenal really doesn't need to dwell on it. I don't think they need to worry about it as much. I don't think they need to think bad about it. You know, my book is Arsenal getting a goal or only losing 2-1 to City in a game that City really didn't deserve to win. You know, it's astonishing for them. And I think they'll push forward from this, and I think they'll play well in their next game, and I think they'll be back to winning ways. Second game of the weekend was Watford at welcome Tottenham Hotspur to the stadium. Now, this game ended 1-0 in Tottenham's favor, but Tottenham really couldn't get the game going at Watford. I mean, they struggled kind of hard, and the goal came in the 93rd, 94th minute. You know, Sanchez got a header in off a corner. And, you know, it's kind of hard to look at it and say, okay, what has Tottenham really done? But we have to give Conte credit. This guy has not lost a game yet since taking over Tottenham in the Prem. Yeah, they're out of the Europa League conference and all that other stuff, but they've been stricken with COVID more than any other team this season so far. So between them and Chelsea and their COVID restrictions, Tottenham actually is still sitting in fifth place. So with that being said, you know, they got games in hand. They got 3 games in hand. I figure they'll still probably be in the top 6 come the end of that. And even though it's a 1-0 win, a win's a win. Tottenham's grinding out these games. And with them grinding out these games, they're winning. And they're not drawing. So 3 points is better than 1. So for Watford, though, you know, they lose again. Kind of sucks. But Watford's still competing for mid-table team, which is where everybody expect them to be at the end of the season. I don't think they're going to go down this season. I think that speculation's kind of over. I mean, Tottenham looks in good form. Watford looks like they're going to hold on till the end of the season. The Prem, I think they'll still be in the Prem next season. The next game for Saturday had Palace versus West Ham. Now, West Ham have been kind of in a dip of form the last couple weeks. They've lost a couple games. But they did go to Crystal Palace, and they did win the game 3-2. Now, Palace did get the 2 goals after they were down 3-0, so credit to Palace for fighting back at home and at least getting 2 goals. But West Ham did hold on to it and did get the win. But once again, this is the West Ham that we've seen at the beginning of the season. I mean, this is a West Ham team that grinding out the wins. They're going to get the win no matter what. And I still think that West Ham's a force to be reckoned with this season. I think that a lot of people have kind of wrote them off due to the losses that they've accumulated over the last couple weeks. But people have to understand, like, they played big teams. You know, when you're on such a high run like they were, it was eventually going to come down. I mean, they don't have the mentality that City or Chelsea or even Liverpool have to continue going week in and week out. And with them playing Europa League and Prem, I think a lot of that's kind of dwelled on them. They've also succeeded to go on through in the League Cup. So they've got a lot of games coming up, and I feel like that's kind of put some tinder on them, and that's why they kind of dropped the ball a little bit the last couple weeks. But in the long run, I still think West Ham is probably still going to finish in the top 5 or top 4. I still think they're going to push for Champions League if they don't end up pushing for at least Europa. And I think that for them going forward, I think they're back to winning ways. I think they're going to continue to be on winning ways as long as they can keep picking up points. I think they'll be fine. Palace, we've seen Palace beat Man City at home. We've seen them beat other big teams this season. We've seen them give teams struggle this season between Chelsea and Liverpool, giving them struggles. So, I mean, Palace losing this game really ain't that big of a deal. I mean, they're still in the top 10, which is about where they finish out season after season. So, I think of right now, they're kind of in the best position they've been in the last couple seasons. So, for them, I think this is good form them. They lost against West Ham, but to lose against a team that's 5-6 points ahead or 5 or 6 places ahead of you is not a big deal. So I think they'll bounce back. They'll pick up points from small teams, whether that's at Norwich, Newcastle. You know, they'll pick up their points there, which will keep them in the top 10. The last game of the weekend on Saturday was Norwich and Leicester. Now, this game was postponed due to COVID, due to the fact that Leicester didn't have enough players. And they had a lot of players out. Same thing, Norris had a lot of COVID stricken. So that game will be played at a later date. Going into Sunday, we had Brentford and Aston Villa. And this game is very interesting because ever since Steven Gerrard kind of took over Villa, they've been in really good form. And they've only had 2 losses, and that came against Liverpool and City, which is nothing to be ashamed of. So you know, you lost to Team 1 and Team 2 in the Prem, so that's nothing to be ashamed of. But other than that, they've grinded out wins, they've gotten wins, and the Stevie G way that everybody thought he would play is working out at Aston Villa. Now, Brentford did win this game on a very late goal, and I said it earlier in the season that I felt like Brentford could compete for a top four or at least top six or seven space, and they've dropped down the ball a little bit with some losses, and I think a lot of that comes from the fact that their high note of starting off the Premier League such in a high fashion kind of dwindled them down a little bit and put them back into perspective and say, hey, you know, we're not in the Championship. You know, this is the Premier League, and it's a whole different scenario. But they grind out a win against Villa, which is a team you would expect them to, you know, have a little bit more on their level, you know, try to get a win, get some points there. They've taken points off of bigger teams, and they take points off Arsenal, you know, at the beginning of the season. So for Brentford, you know, I think they're starting to kind of pick up their wins again. I think that they're getting to the point where they'll be more consistent. They're not going to go down this season. I mean, if they go down this season, I'll be very, very surprised. I feel like at this point in the season, where they are now, they're going to end up finishing mid-table team, which is a very strong finish for them, considering that they came up from the Championship just from playoffs, where you look at someone like Norwich, who won the Championship last year and is in dead last place. So for Brentford to be where they are, for them to keep getting wins like they are, for them to get getting draws or grinding out points or getting what they can, for Brentford, I mean, they're in a perfect spot. I don't see any downfall in Brentford. I think they've got some issues here and there, but, I mean, every team's going to, you know, have a bad day or have an off day. But I think where they've kind of come down off their Premier League success high when the first couple games, the first pass of the season, I feel like now they're kind of leveling out. They're going to end up being a mid-table team, which is nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, they're in the Premier League, and, you know, I think they build on that and go for next season. Second game was Brighton versus Everton. So this game was one of them games that Everton fought back again to win, or to draw, or to lose against. They did fight back, but Brighton being in ninth place, like we've said it earlier this season, you know, Brighton was in the top four for a long time again this season, but they've kind of dropped the ball a little bit, gone down to ninth. They've had a bunch of draws. They've had some losses, but still nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, Brighton's on a whole other level this season, and Graham Potter just keeps showing that why. They scored two early goals, and then Calvert-Lewin got a penalty, and it was missed, which, you know, I feel bad for Everton in that sense because it would have, I think, kind of changed the dynamic of the game. But we did get a goal from Gordon. Actually, I got two goals from Gordon over the weekend for Everton, which really put up the difference for him because he's had a kind of a rocky start to his Everton debut and kind of a rocky start to his, you know, Everton career. But this young man came up, scored two goals, got the game back to 2-3. Definitely tried to go for third goal. I mean, end of the game was astonishing. Everton was pushing. They were trying so hard to get the last goal. It just never came. And I feel bad for them in the sense that they tried so hard to get that final goal and try to get points off this game, but it just wasn't going to happen for them. It just wasn't in their way to win. And, I mean, they've had a lot of losses this season, and I do think that Rafa Benitez is really under a microscope right now. I think that his time at Everton's probably going to come to an end soon, if sooner than not later. And I feel bad for them in that sense because he is a very good coach, and I feel like he probably can take Everton to a new level. But the players that they've had out, the players that they don't have right now that are fit, I mean, it is kind of going against him, and I think it's going to end up costing him his job. But Everton, where they are on the table, I mean, it's not that bad. They're in 15th. They're still safe. I mean, they still got a couple games left in the season. They've got three games in hand. I mean, they win all three games. They end up going, you know, into the top 10. So, I mean, they got plenty of time. They got plenty of things to assess. And they still got a lot of season left to go. But your last game, or the other big game of the weekend, was Leeds versus Burnley. Now, Leeds has been in a really big downfall this whole season. And Leeds have struggled, and the high they were on last season, it just has not been there. And I don't think that's any shame of them. I think that, you know, first season back in the Prem last year, they were just excited to be back after so many years. But this season, I feel like Bessic is just kind of look at that success they had last year and he's tried to build on it, but it really hasn't gone in his favor, hasn't worked for him. So with that being said, they've kind of dropped the ball a little bit. But they did get a win at Burnley, or a win at home against Burnley over the weekend. They won 3-1. And I mean, it was a really good matchup. It took them to 16th place. Burnley dropped down to 18th with only one win still for the season. But Jack Harrison scored. Stuart Dallas scored. I mean, and the same people that kind of took Leeds last year to where they were are the guys that are stepping up again this season and scoring now. So I think Leeds take this and they build off of it. I think they build forward with this. I feel like they get the wins going forward now. You know, they need to take as many possible points off these low teams, whether it's Burnley, Norwich, Newcastle, Brentford, if they end up playing Brentford again, when they play Brentford again, Everton. These teams that are struggling, these are the teams that Leeds can take the points off of and get back into the top 10. So we'll have to see where Bedwich goes after this. Like I said, it's one of their first wins over the last couple weeks. So definitely excited to see where they go from here. I think that they'll build off this. I think they do something strong off of this. But, you know, it just kind of depends on where they stand. Southampton was supposed to play this weekend against Newcastle. But that game ended up getting postponed due to COVID as well. But the big game of the weekend that everybody was excited to watch, especially for me, was Chelsea welcome Liverpool. Now, let's talk about this game because the first 45 minutes is where all the goals came from. And the other half was all based on the goalkeepers, if you really want to get serious about it. So, first kick of the game, within a minute, should Mane have been sent off? And that's the question. Could it have changed the whole dynamic of the situation? I think that Mane could have been sent off for it. He did poke Azpilicueta's eye. They both went up for the ball. I understand why he wasn't sent off due to the fact that, you know, it was so early in the game. But it was a very big call. If he'd have been sent off the whole game, the whole dynamic, everything would have been changed. But end up not going that way. Chelsea ended up really pushing against Liverpool. Liverpool was without a lot of players due to COVID. They were without Alisson. They were without Firmino. Klopp wasn't even on the pitch due to his COVID scenario. Chelsea also was without Lukaku due to the fact that, due to the fact of his statements in the interview. And I feel like this was Chelsea's game to lose. And I feel like they didn't lose the game, but I feel like they could have done a lot better. I think they could have really capitalized on Liverpool missing the players that they were missing, and they chose not to do it. So they missed a wide open. They missed a very good chance early in the first half, and they missed it, and it was kind of bad, but it ended up being Mane that scored the first goal, and the goal he scored was the same type of goal that Chelsea missed out on. So they went 1-0 up. Within 10 minutes later, they were up again 2-0. Liverpool through Salah, and I just felt like, okay, this game is coming to an end. Liverpool's going to dominate Chelsea. This is it. But Chelsea fought back, got two great goals back-to-back within like a 5 or 6 minute time frame to tie the game up 2-2. So the first half had all your goals. It was just a back-and-forth, heated match. Very, very fun to watch. Very interesting. Both teams going for the win. But when it got to the second part of the game, it all came down to the goalkeepers. Now, with them not having Alisson in net for Liverpool, had young boy Keller in. Dude made outrageous saves the whole second half. Really enjoyed watching him play. Once again, he gets his start for Liverpool, which has been good for him. Mendy for Chelsea, like, he was just out of this world for, I mean, he was just out of this world for Chelsea. Now, he did get a really good save against Salah, which I personally believe will probably go down as save of the season. I mean, this dude put his body on the line, hit the post with his chest, with his whole body. I mean, he really put his body on the line to save this goal. And I feel like that when him leaving now to go to AFCON is really going to be hurting Chelsea going forward in the title race. And as a City supporter, them both drawing for me and my team, fantastic. You know, it was a win in City's book. But I still highly recommend or highly feel that Chelsea is in this title race. I highly feel that Liverpool's in this title race. I feel that both of them are going to continue to push for the title against City. I think City's eventually going to drop points. And what's going to be the breaking point of this season and what's going to be the call of the season is Liverpool without Salah and Mendy at AFCON, and Chelsea is without Mendy now until February because of AFCON. So Chelsea does have Kepa they can bring in, but Kepa is one of them players that has never really been trusted at Chelsea. Liverpool, on the other hand, they don't really have anybody they can really bring in. So, I think that this next month will be the title decider. I think that this will be Chelsea's title decider. I think this will be Liverpool's title decider. Without these players, this is what's going to be what Chelsea and Liverpool have to do. They have to show the depth that City's had. They have to show the mentality to move forward without these star players, which is going to be hard for them to do. I think Chelsea's got a better chance than Liverpool just because Liverpool's losing their two main people, where Chelsea's only losing the goalkeeper when they got a backup. But with Liverpool having COVID issues, now not having their two main forwards, this is definitely going to be interesting to see where they go from here. So that's kind of the wrap on the weekend. We got Monday. We had Wolves at Man United at Old Trafford. Now, this game, Wolves did win this game 1-0, and they scored very, very late in this game, like 82nd minute. And I just feel that since Ollie's been sacked and Ragnek has took over, I just feel like nothing has changed at United for anybody. I feel like this guillotine press that he's trying to do just is not working. I feel that United is just so far in the past that they just cannot do anything about it. And it sucks because United's always had success, and they've always been that team that, you know, gets that United time at the end of a game. They can do things to get a win, blah, 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 blah. But you're at home against Wolves, a team that hasn't really done great in the Prem. I mean, they're in ninth place, but they've struggled a little bit. Or they're in eighth place, I'm sorry, and struggled a little bit. But they're still a team that United should easily go through and beat, and they did not win. And for me, personally, if I was a, you know, neutral supporter for all teams, I would say, you know, like, what has happened to United? What's going on still? Like, why is this system not working, you know? I would have said, let's just keep Ollie at the wheel. I mean, at this point, Ollie was at least winning games, or at least, you know, winning games against teams they should be winning against. They may have struggled, but they were winning games. So Wolves won for the first time in 40 years at Old Trafford, breaking that record and breaking that deadlock they haven't been able to break in years. But where does this leave United? And I think that for United, I mean, like I said, it's not a manager issue. It's not a player issue. It's a past issue. And I think that United has lived in the past for so long, and they're so used to success that they cannot break this. And I know I might get a lot of hate for this, or I might get a lot of discrimination against this, but as long as Sir Alex Ferguson is on the board, as long as the Glazer family is in charge, as long as the things that are repeating themselves are constantly happening, United is always going to be in this book and always going to be struggling the way they are. They're never going to get ahead. United needs a complete rebuild from board to director of football to owners. Need to give more to their coaches, have more faith in the coach. I mean, watch them fire David Moyes after the first year after Silas Ferguson left. We watched them fire David Moyes quickly. We watched them fire Louis van Gaal not soon after that, after he took over. And then Jose came. That didn't last long. Now, Ollie's been at the wheel for a while. I mean, and it was working. Then it wasn't. Then it was. Then it wasn't. Then it started working really good. They finished second last season. Then this season, they kind of struggled again. Now they brought in an intern manager who has a very poor record. And so the thing is, like, United is so strugglesome on, like, oh, we brought Ronaldo back. Yes, you brought the past back. You bring in back a player, which I'm all for you guys doing. You know, I understand why you've done it. It builds what you have. But to be the brand that United is, to be the class of players they've brought in, the money they've spent, United should be competing for a title between City, Chelsea, and Liverpool, and they're not. So Ronaldo looks lazy. The team looks lazy. The team looks out of positioning. They don't understand what they're doing. They're not running as a team. And I feel a lot of that's just due to United is so focused on living in the way they've always lived with their past dates and their past titles that they've come to the point now where they don't know what else to do. And until that changes, United is always going to be in the same boat. They're going to be in the same situation. And it's going to take somebody to make the decision on who is going to step down from the board, who's going to be the new director of football, who's going to be the new owners, if it comes down to that, what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen for United. It doesn't matter if they bring in a quality coach. It doesn't matter if they bring in more quality players. Until they fix the back room and the foundation of the club, they're going to be in this situation. So that's how I'm going to talk about that. I don't feel like rambling on about United due to the fact that, you know, there's a lot of United fans. I don't want to get that kind of hatred towards me. I'm just speaking how I feel as a outstander of how United could really fix the problem. But I've enjoyed doing this for the beginning of the new year. We're back, American FC. If you want to continue to listen to us, you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor. We're on everything as of right now. We will be setting up a YouTube channel as well. So make sure to follow and like that. We have a Facebook page up. This has been wonderful, and I thank you so much for listening to American FC, and y'all have a good day.